I was into, yeah, like Information Society and EMF and Big Audio Dynamite. I loved all that shit. I was like, I can't wait for the 90s. It's going to be so cool. And then grunge swooped in and made everyone sad and dirty.
Yeah,
Remember
that
how
Eddie
dirty
Vedder.
everyone was? No one talks
Oh
about
yeah, no, that Eddie Vedder, man.
that.
It wasn't just, and it also bled into nu metal too. People weren't washing their hair so that they could get dreads.
Yeah. Oh, those stinky 90s dreads. Yeah.
Yep,
I
stinky
remember
90s
them.
dreads. Oh yeah.
It was a great time to be disgusting.
Citizens of Earth, welcome to Accelerative Thrust. I'm Dan.
And I'm Eric.
And guess what, Eric?
What?
I have a question for you.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. So remember when you were talking we were talking about that Squeeze album that
Yeah.
was my pick, like, and you were kind of talking about how the songwriting on that record was just super, like I described it as like a master class in songwriting, and you said the kind of essentially the same thing. You said that that's the songwriting is like just extraordinary, and yeah, it's kind of maybe something that's been lost over time a little bit through me. So I have a question. Do you think that there might be like an intentional with, say, like the new and this is maybe going to sound a little boomerish, I don't know.
Boomer take.
But maybe with like the newest, I don't know, advances in technology when it comes to not just music, but also anything, any form of entertainment. Well, we could be talking about film here. We could be talking about animation. Do you think there's kind of a letting go of professionalism on purpose thing that's kind of going on right now? Like it doesn't, like professionalism in like media is not relevant right now at this. I'm not going to say anymore because you never know when certain things will circle back. It always happens. But like right now at this day, in this day and age, like there, I've been seeing, I'll just use kind of like what I've been hearing about what's been going on, like the underground rap scene lately, is there's actually been sort of this phenomenon.
Baby.
Phenomenon may be a ridiculous word to use here, but there's been this thing happening in underground rap, and I would even say on like underground punk rock or whatever too, where you just kind of like record an album, you don't master it, and you just slap a cover, you release it on, you know, Bandcamp or Spotify or whatever. Maybe do like a few, like 100 cassette copies and 50 vinyl releases or something like that. And that's, you know, that's all you're going to hear from like that artist, that release. And then they move on to the next thing. And it's like unmastered album after unmastered album. And it's like, that's what's kind of being sort of like, it's sort of like the hustle mentality or whatever. Do you think that that is the result of like just sort of purposely ignoring like professionalism?
Yeah, so you mean like a rejection
Yeah,
almost,
a rejection, and
like a
maybe,
concerted rejection.
yeah, and maybe professionalism isn't necessarily the right thing, the right word I'm looking for, but just like, I guess maybe it is just sort of like ignoring like maybe rules might even be, but I would say professionalism in the sense of like in the 90s, in order to really get heard as a band or in order to quote unquote sell units, you had to get a deal. You had to make a video on MTV.
Just sign your life. I mean, your name on the contract.
You know what I mean? And even then, that there was no guarantees, but like, you know what I mean? Do you think that professionalism in that sense is kind of dead right now?
No, I don't think it's dead, but I think it's reserved for a completely different kind of situation and audience and even motivations, like I don't think a lot of the underground want to sound professional. You know, I don't think it's like they're deciding it necessarily. It's more like they're embracing what they got. I guess what I'm trying to say is everyone has the ability and technology to make music now with no holds barred, where that used to be sort of like outsider music. Now that's just everywhere music, you know. Daniel Johnston didn't master his releases. It's like that same thing, except now everyone has the same low level of technology available to them. I don't know. Like, I just think, yeah, the technology makes a big difference because it levels the playing field, at least to a certain extent. The majority of artists that are familiar to the public, I think they do still record that way, like the old way. But I don't know. I think it's been that way for a while. I think that with the advent of recording software and Bandcamp and stuff, that people might be able to get it further, like its reach further. But I think it's the equivalent of someone using a Tascam in the 90s to me, you know. That's what I think. But I do think there's people embrace it because that's what they have, and they start to enjoy that aspect of it, kind of like black metal, early black metal. They wanted it all to sound like shit and like it was recorded on a four track, even though they're in like major studios and stuff. So, right. I mean, there's that element too. But to me, I just think it's more like, this is what home recording sounds like now. These are the cassette EPs by the small punk bands that get traded around at shows, but now it's on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I miss that level of professionalism. And so,
yeah,
Eric, here's what I'm going to say.
Oh, shit, man.
From this point. I like how you sound like you have so much faith in what I'm going to say. This is what I'm going to say. From this point forward, this is a professional podcast.
Oh, shit.
So what we're going to do is we're going to travel back in time using this time machine that I have right here.
Yeah.
To
the
way back machine to a time when professionalism was, you know, what you needed to have a podcast back in the 90s.
yeah.
We're going to be the first podcast in the 90s, Eric.
Nice. How about that? Yeah.
All right. So hold on a second. I got to pull this lever on this time machine here. All right, so we're in the 90s now.
Wow.
Yeah.
My hair is so long.
Yeah. Oh, whoa. My Sonic Youth t-shirt is on me. This is great.
Wow. I have no self-esteem.
I have no responsibility.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
I love the 90s.
I love the 90s.
I don't think I'm ever going to leave the 90s, Eric.
Oh, wow.
We're going to stay here for as long as we live.
Who's we?
Well,
I don't want to be back in the 90s.
You don't want to wake up and have it be the same decade, like over and over again. It'll be like sort of like Groundhog Day, only it would be the 90s.
Okay, so it's Groundhog Decade.
So yeah, Groundhog Decade.
You get to December 31st, 1999.
Yeah, but
and then you start back over on January 1st, 1990.
Yes, exactly.
So it's like Y2K actually was.
Yeah, that's what Y2K was, man.
Just start over.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, I love EMF. This is the future of music.
That song, You're Unbelievable, is what you wake up to on the alarm clock every morning.
Nice. What's the impetus for this? Why are we traveling back to the 90s?
To be professional.
Oh.
I feel like the future has... I can't decide if we've wronged the future or if the future has wronged us, Eric. But for whatever reason, our podcast just isn't professional enough.
Yeah, well, I'd agree with that.
the 90s might help us. I mean, just look around you. Nirvana posters. Well, I don't know. What year? Okay,
well, not 90. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, like,
not 90. Yes.
We're all listening to the, I don't even know what was happening. I was into, like Information Society and EMF and Big Audio Dynamite. I loved all that shit. I was like, I can't wait for the 90s. It's going to be so cool. And then grunge swooped in and made everyone sad and dirty.
Yeah,
remember how Eddie dirty Vedder. Everyone was? No one talks about that.
Oh yeah, no, that Eddie Vedder, man. It wasn't just, and it also bled into nu metal too. People weren't washing their hair so that they could get dreads.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, those stinky '90s dreads. Yeah.
Yep. Stinky. I remember 90s dreads. Oh yeah.
A great time to be disgusting.
Hold on a second. We didn't actually time travel because I fell asleep and it was a dream, remember?
Oh, yeah, right. That's why I was just sitting here like, Dan, wake up.
Wake up.
Yeah, the whole time.
What are you talking about? And then you were like moving your arms and legs, and I was like, he thinks he's in the 90s again.
So that voice from heaven that I thought was God saying, Dan, wake up, was really you, Eric.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dan, wake up.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
Holy bajolita.
You got to come back to the shitty 2020s.
What if I don't want you, God? What if I want to stay in the 90s? Oh, you're just reenacting what happened. Okay, gotcha. I thought you were really talking to me as God. Sorry.
I propose you live in a delusional state. And just live in the 90s right now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what, though?
What?
One of my favorite discoveries in life is new music from the 2020s. And I like music from the 90s occasionally. And as exemplified from my last pick on the show, the 80s.
Sometimes the 80s.
Sometimes the 80s. But you know what? All of our picks this time are from, I think, this year, 2024, aren't they?
I think two of them at least are from 2023.
Okay.
But I mean, we're only, a little bit into this year. So
yeah, it's
same diff, really.
Yep. 2 months, 2 months. Phew. Boy, it was quite an adventure listening to all of these musics.
Yeah. Lots of musics. Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is this, and I say this every time, but this is a holy grail.
Wow.
This is a holy grail of releases brought to you by both you and I, Eric.
Holy grail.
Holy grail.
Holy grail.
Come on, everybody. It's record time.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do the damn thing.
Let's do the damn
thing. So my choice this week, is by a New York-based guitarist, banjoist person named Brandon Seabrook. And the record is called Brutal Love Champ. And that's just one word, all smashed together, Brutal Love Champ. Yeah, this is some pretty wild stuff, actually. So I would say, overall, what I had written down for a description is... kinetic, shape-shifting, technical, avant-garde jazz. So that sounds like a lot, but I think it's all necessary to mention. So basically, what we have here is some really well-done avant-garde jazz. It's rare that I listen to like really pure, straightforward jazz. It almost has to have this weird side to it, and this has that weird side in spades. It goes everywhere musically, like literally everywhere, all at the same time. Very hard to wrap your head around. I wouldn't say it's off-putting by any means, but it just never stops changing and turning into something different. Yeah, it's really intense. unrelenting sort of cartoon chaos with really long sections of sort of like dark, brooding strangeness. It's hard to describe because there's really nothing to hang your hat on except other things that are similar. And so I'll get back to that in a second. But yeah, the performances are really amazing, especially the drumming. I think the drumming, it almost plays out as if this is one track. And I'm sure it's not by any means, but the drumming just comes across as someone waiting for their moments to play, coming in, doing the thing, pulling back. They're just really involved in the construction and what's happening with the music, but everyone who's playing really is. It's somehow completely controlled. Like I said, I think it's really technical in places and played to perfection, but also just really confusing and boundary pushing. And honestly, at times, really fun, I think. And that's a weird way to put it, I know, because how I just described that doesn't seem like it would be fun to listen to, more like cerebral, but I guarantee that's not how it comes off. So yeah, things that it really reminded me of. And this is where it'll sort of make sense why I chose it and why I wanted to share it with our listeners, because this falls squarely into things that I think, if you listen to this show, you at least know we love, and I would guess chances are that you love as well. So I think this easily fits into sort of like avant-garde new music and things like that, like George Crumb or even Giorgi Ligeti. The conduit between that stuff into more wild stuff would be John Zorn, and kind of all aspects of John Zorn, from his string quartet stuff all the way through Naked City, everything in between. I think you kind of hear that in here. So that leads us into like Mr. Bungle. Honestly, I think if you like Disco Volante like a lot, you're going to like this as well. I think this is also a good test to see if you like Mr. Bungle as a band or if you really just like Mike Patton, because this to me comes off as exactly the same kind of music as Disco Volante, but there's no vocalist kind of leading us through the tracks. There are vocals at points, but not in the same way by any means. I would say this is closer to like Secret Chiefs 3 in that sense. And then, you know, the Residents, especially the Snakefinger era with Snakefinger on guitar, I think that this is similar to that. Other jazz stuff like Ornette Coleman, I think, is there too. So yeah, I would say if you like any of that stuff, you should at least give this a chance. I will say the first track starts with panpipe kind of sound or flute or something, kind of like that Andre 3000 record, or Xavier Renegade Angel, like that level of new age sort of pan flute kind of sound. But I think it's there only to subvert so that it can be picked apart and ruined and given back to you in a crazy ass sort of way. I think it's set up to sort of lull you into thinking you know what's going to happen. So with that being said, when you listen to the first minute of this record, don't just turn it off, because it does get really wild and really cool. What'd you think, Dan?
Well, let me first start off by saying this record started off, it's funny you mentioned that first minute, because I honestly thought like, oh man, am I going to really listen to like an hour of this thing going on?
Right.
You know, because that's sort of the impression that you get just from looking at the cover, that this is going to be, you know, you know, like, well, kind of like that Andre 3000 record that mm-hmm. you sort of mentioned. But that changes extremely, extremely quick, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It went from sort of being that to this is not what I expected at all when you sent me this pick. Let me first say that, yes, I very much enjoyed this. At the end of the day, it was a really, really just adventurous and joyful listening experience. It's extremely eclectic. Parts of it, you know, are very chaotic, but then some of it is just really some of the most gorgeous music you'd ever hear. Some of the stuff sounds like circus music, or like deranged circus music or something. Mm-hmm. Some of it sounds like sort of acoustic prog rock, a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit of a Spanish guitar, or as you mentioned, Eric, avant-garde guitar a little bit. Yeah, I think he plays his guitar in the style of a free jazz musician, like sort of the way that like a lot of free jazz musicians may approach like a horn or something. It seems to me like he approaches the guitar in that way. So yeah, I would definitely call this like fusion music. There really isn't a lot that I can add to what Eric said, because I really think that he described it much better and did justice to it, you know, much better than I can. But it's just really interesting and fun and strange and very well thought out music. Yeah, very avant-garde. There's kind of I want to say, like, to me, I heard sort of like a clunk to it. Like it almost sounds a little at times like claustrophobic as far as the recording goes, for any lack of other way to describe it. But I think that added to just sort of the wackiness and sort of the listening experience. I was also expecting there to be vocals on this. Mm-hmm. So I was really surprised that it was all instrumental. And I liked the fact that it was all instrumental. I agree with most of Eric's things that it reminded him of. I definitely heard Ornette Coleman for sure. Definitely heard John Zorn and Mr. Bungle. That's like without a doubt. But also, I'm going to say that I heard kind of a little bit of the more avant-garde side of Tom Waits in the music as well, a little bit. Like, especially like when you start getting into some of the later era stuff, like Blood Money or even like Real Gone, or something like that. But another thing, and this might be a little surprising, I don't know, in the same way that you kind of described a litmus test for whether you're a fan of Mr. Bungle as a band or just Mike Patton, in a different way, but kind of similar. Mm-hmm. This also reminded me of two specific Melvins releases that have been released fairly recently. In, I want to say 2012 or 2013, they did a record called Freak Puke with Trevor Dunn. Mm-hmm. And that record featured Buzz Osborne on guitar and vocals, Trevor Dunn on stand-up bass, and Dale Crover on an acoustic drum kit playing brushes. So it was a very sort of loungy take on the Melvins a little bit. And then the other album, or more specifically, one side of an album, because this was actually a double album that was released by the Melvins, called A Walk with Life and Death. And the first record was the soundtrack to a movie that hasn't been made yet, but it was basically just kind of a bunch of like weird ambient noises mixed with like a little bit of like free jazz and kind of, you know, it's all instrumental and some of it is just kind of noise. And then the second CD is kind of a regular Melvins album sort of. But anyway, this reminds me of the first side of A Walk with Life and Death. There's a lot of, I feel like, the same tones when this record kind of gets a little ambient, and maybe even, I don't know, you could even sort of say droney in parts a little bit. There's a part of that that reminded me of those specific Melvins records. But anyway, aside from all that, yeah. So that's what this stuff reminds me of. Mr. Bungle, John Zorn, and just a lot of the avant-garde music. So yeah, I definitely agree with you 100% on that, Eric. Cool.
I don't want to jump back in, but did forget to say something.
Sure.
When I said this will test whether you like Mr. Bungle as a band or Mike Patton, it sounds like I'm judging you if that's the case.
Sure.
But I experienced the same thing in reverse, whereas this would also be a good test if you like Frank Zappa or Frank Zappa's band. And I've said before that I don't like Frank Zappa, but this record actually showed me that I just don't like his voice. Because it is similar. I think it moves the same way as Zappa, you know, same ideas or whatever. And so just having that without the voice, it worked for me. So, I'm just saying, I'm not judging anyone for not liking a vocalist or only really liking the vocalist. Like, it makes a huge difference. So
that's a really interesting point. Frank Zappa, that didn't even come to mind, but nice. Interesting stuff.
So yeah, Brandon Seabrook, Brutal Love Champ, Crazy Shit.
So the album that I picked is also kind of a little strange, but in a much different way. I also feel like it's a lot more accessible than Brandon Seabrook. But it's an album by this band called Slift, and the name of the album is Eilion. And Slift are based in Toulouse, France, and it consists of two brothers, Gene Fawcett on guitar, vocals, and synths, Remy Fawcett on bass, and then they have a friend called Kinnick Flores on drums. So this is a three-piece, and let me tell you, for a three-piece, this band has one of the largest sounds I have ever heard. So they formed in 2016, and honestly, they sound like, to me on this record, like they've been together since like the 90s. Boy, this really is a 90s-centric episode, isn't it? The production on this album is so good. It's thick. It's super heavy. It's full of riff after riff. It's just really solid. Playing, solid performance. I mean, the best way that I can really describe it, and I know that this is a very sort of generic description, but to me, this is just doomy progressive rock. And it really does take you on a journey. And I know that may sound kind of cheesy, but it really does. It has monster riffs. The bass and guitar are both just so solid in tone, in presentation, in the way that they play off of each other. The drums are just thunderous. I mean, honestly, it's just sonically very, very epic. It is, I feel, kind of in a same but different way that Brandon Seabrook kind of requires, I feel, like your full attention to get through the entire record. I feel that this also is sort of that way as well. Not that it's not overly super complicated or anything, but I mean, it is complicated, but it's just in a different way that Brandon Seabrook, but it's similar in that, you know, I feel like the best way to listen to both of these albums is like sitting down with your headphones and kind of just tuning out everything else. It just sounds like the end of the world, or like, I don't know, floating in space or something. There are times where the drums do this really sort of tribal-esque thing. Sometimes the vocals are kind of, I don't know, buried in the mix, but in such a way that it really adds sort of this, I don't know, ghostly effect or ghostly tone or something. When the guitars get clean, they just have this amazing like reverb to them. And, you know, there's a lot of sort of mid sections where they'll do that. And yeah, a lot of like clean and heavy and sort of, I feel like, experimentation with the tone. It seems to me like the record is probably telling a story. So I kind of assume that it's maybe sort of a concept record. If it's not in content, it definitely is in sound. I mean, it sounds very cinematic, and I could just imagine some of the parts of this record sort of being in like movies where things are kind of blowing up and or whatever, or it's like approaching Armageddon or something like that. Just really epic. And yeah, the clean parts on this though are also just very calming, and I don't know, it moves at a pace that I think just resonates really well with, I guess, what it's trying to convey. And yeah, to me, it's just sort of like an adventure listening to it. And it's some of the best like doom metal / prog rock that's come out in the past few years. Yeah, I think it's really masterful at at its genre. So I really loved it. Stuff that it reminded me of, well, first and foremost, two prog rock bands that it reminded me of, mostly because of the fact that they are a three-piece that has such a full sound, Rush and King Crimson. And I also feel like both of those bands encaptured the same type of feeling that this record did back in their time, like Rush with 2112 and King Crimson with In the Court of the Crimson King. But also Tool, parts of it really reminded me of Tool, especially the later proggier stuff, Lateralis, 10,000 Days, Fear Inoculum, Mastodon, especially like albums like Leviathan and Crack the Sky, Yob, and also a little bit of Baroness and the Fall of Hell and Nothing split a little bit. Yeah, there's a super doomy side to it, but a super gorgeous side to it. And just sonically, I just think this is one of the best heavy records that I've heard recently. What did you think, Eric?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I think, again, we sort of heard things a little differently, which is mm-hmm. awesome, because I don't know. I think I really enjoy it when that happens, because you know, there are many ways to skin a cat, I guess is what they say. But so yeah, I do hear all the prog stuff you referenced, and also sort of the doomy side of things, totally there. But what I heard was more like heavy psych stoner rock, which I also thought veered into metal and ambient at times, but at its core was sort of like, yeah, stoner hard rock versus, you know, stoner metal. But yeah, everything else pretty much the same. I think it's just like what rises to the top of your brain when you hear it, sort of. But yeah, super great performances. You could hear everything very clearly. I love the production of this, especially the bass. Like, the bass player is earning it, let's just say. really solid, but really natural, which is not always the case with more technical or proggy sort of things. It really is great, and it comes through, and the playing is phenomenal. The drumming as well is super expressive and fluid. And the reason I mention that is because I do think at its core there is a prog element to it, and it is technical in a sense, but it's not rigid. And that's where the psych part of it kind of comes in for me. It's kind of like prog psych, which is, you know, interesting. The guitars are super noisy, heavy, lots of effects, but a lot of sections with no distortion. The guitar goes everywhere, is how I should say it, and has a lot of different sounds. Really long, immersive songs with lots of deviations from the main theme. Like sometimes they completely abandon the established song and go somewhere else, just totally come back, move around and play with those themes. Yeah, there's reoccurring themes throughout the songs, and I think that's really cool. But yeah, the explorations on this were sort of my favorite part. I liked the heavy part of it too. But yeah, I really enjoyed the sort of experimental parts of it. The group that I thought it sounded the most like, and after it entered my head, I couldn't unhear how much I thought they sounded like them, was Big Business. Like, I think the singer has a very similar voice, and the drumming in Big Business is also very fluid and moving and kind of tom heavy and stuff, and not necessarily concerned with being the foundation of the song until it matters, and then you know, hitting those big moments. And I felt like this was real similar. And then also Danava. Now, Danava doesn't really go into those long sort of experimental sections. I mean, sometimes they do, but not like this, not minute after minute of being off bass, as it were, in your song. But a lot of the psych elements of Danava and that stoner rock element, I don't think Danava, personally, I don't think they're metal. I would say that they're heavy rock. And I know that's splitting hairs with some people, but for me, there is a difference. So it's like a psych, heavy rock sort of thing. Along those same lines, Assemble Head and Sunburst Sound really reminded me of that. And a lot of the drumming and sort of the side explorations kind of reminded me of like The Liars or something like that. So, but I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was really cool. All those things that I mentioned, all those bands, I love all of them. So like, this is great stuff. And I would say if you like those bands and what Dan mentioned, you're gonna enjoy this too. So
yeah,
Slift, Eye Lion. Cool. So, for our local release,
keep it local,
we're going to talk about Mall of America. Until Forever is the name of the record, and it came out 2023, but I think near the end of 2023, so still a pretty new release. Yeah, we reviewed Mall of America Alive at Gabe's, a live album, not that long ago, but now they've put out this full length. Yeah, so it's similar to what we heard on the live record. Really atmospheric, creepy. I would personally call this, I mean, I would say that it's noise, but I don't think that really does it justice. I would call this traditional industrial noise. I know that sounds silly, but what I mean is, like, it's industrial in the vein of like Einstürzende Neubauten or Throbbing Gristle. This isn't just like heavy drum beats and stuff. This is like, it sounds like machinery. It sounds, I think it's right in that same vein of that kind of stuff. I think there are really cool performances by everyone. I think that having multiple people playing at the same time makes it feel a little more wild and pensive and just chaotic. It's Corbin and Ian and Phil Mall. And overall, I think this is his project, and those guys are joining him. But I think over time, it has morphed into more of a band situation. Yeah, my favorite part of this recording, this is going to sound weird, but it's sort of like the incidental room sound and movement. You can just hear things being moved around. You can hear mic stands or like just people rustling or whatever. And that's offset by, you know, really loud, surprising hits and sort of like vocal murmurings. So this combination of things where we're sort of in a room and you can hear that movement, then you can kind of hear these scary sounds. And like I said, just vocal murmurings is the only word I can come up with. It makes me feel like I'm sort of in the head of someone obsessively working on something strange or scary, but I'm also in the room with them. And while they're doing it, I know this sounds so weird, but I think it has like really heavy horror vibes. There's a lot of, I don't know, just elemental horror stuff happening. I think it could be like an alternate score for something like Tourist Trap or like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. And the reason I say that is because both of those movies contain sections where kind of like scary people are just working on things. And that's kind of what this feels like, scary people working on things. I don't know. But yeah, really great sounds, great performances. I think everyone involved is taking some risks the whole time. I really like the synth sounds. There's a lot of effective like instrument approximations, if that makes any sense. So we get a lot of strings, a lot of woodwinds, oboe sounds, like bowed cymbal, celesta, organ. Like we have a bunch of different instruments coming in that are traditional sort of like horror score instruments. But I think most of those are accomplished on synthesizer. So that's really cool too. But yeah, overall, I just think it was atmospheric and creepy and legit scary at moments, but also gave way to some really cool ambient mellow moments too. The whole thing's not just terrifying, but I loved it. Things that it reminded me of, like I said already, Einstürzende Neubauten, Throbbing Gristle, Coil, Stockhausen, and maybe like Disaster Piece, who did the It Follows score, or, you know, more modern horror score stuff like that. Maybe Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor, things like that. So I thought it was really cool. What'd you think, Dan?
I really, really enjoyed this a lot, actually. I don't listen to this kind of music regularly, so it's hard for me to really make comparisons. So a lot of the things that I'm going to compare this to are sort of the stuff that I've heard that would remind me of this, and maybe not necessarily in the same genre, I guess you could say. It's very haunting, very eerie, and kind of scary sounding. I definitely hear the sort of room vibe, or almost like basement vibe you were talking about. Yeah, it definitely sounds, and I feel like I always say this whenever music like this is in our listening rotation, it does definitely sound like it could be a movie score to a very strange, like, avant-garde movie or a horror movie or a sci-fi movie. There's a lot of really cool synth sounds. As Eric mentioned, a lot of really interesting instrumentation that I feel kind of sounds like they're sort of on the lower tuned end of things, which I think adds to the effect of it being sort of dark sounding and sort of just weird sounding, which is what I really liked about it. Yeah, there's just this really sort of creepy sort of sound to it that, I don't know. Yeah, I heard like things that maybe sounded like doors opening and closing. There was one track where you heard some talking in the background, and I'm not sure if that was really kind of supposed to be part of the song or if that was just stuff that was kind of left in. But again, it added to the eeriness of it. Like, it added to almost sounded like somebody was just sort of in another room and they were hearing stuff through the wall or something. But yeah, very spacey. My favorite part of it was the synth sounds. I think that Phil has a really real talent when it comes to bringing out these sounds that I've never really heard anybody else really be able to bring out when it comes to like electronic instruments. I mean, I've always appreciated that about Phil Mall. And I kind of think this is probably my favorite project that I've heard from him. Yeah, it totally sounds like it could be a movie score. It just, I don't know. It invokes images of like electrocution or like electricity kind of, or like, I don't know, like the Poltergeist, you know, where there's like this blue TV in a dark room or something with like snow or whatever, you know, like that sort of like old school, colorful neon sort of horror imagery that you kind of always saw, like that aesthetic. That's kind of what this brings to mind for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he did a really good job of bringing that sort of feeling, whether that was the intent or not. That's definitely what it brought out for me. So the stuff that I would say that it reminded me of, I'm also going to put the Melvins' A Walk with Life and Death on here. Then it also reminded me a lot of Throbbing Gristle. It also reminded me a lot of Coil. And it even reminded me a little bit of some of the instrumental stuff that Trent Reznor would do, whether it would be on like the Ghosts 1-4 album or even on some of the Nine Inch Nails stuff, like some of the instrumental tracks from Nine Inch Nails, and also the movie scores that he did. The more ambient stuff, you know, obviously this isn't industrial in the sense of like March of the Pigs or mm-hmm. Mr. Self-Destruct or something like that, but it's industrial in the sense, like Eric said, that it there's a lot of sort of mechanical electronic noises going on. It's definitely more ambient than, you know, what maybe a lot of people think of when they think of industrial. And that's kind of one of the things that I feel all three of these releases that we talked about today have in common, is that I feel like you really just have to devote time to listen to these records in full. I feel like to kind of get like the whole experience of it, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? For me, the best way to listen to any one of these releases was just to put headphones on and sort of just, you know, tune everything else out if you can. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's really hard to do, but that's kind of what I feel these records that we talked about on this episode, that's what I feel they kind of had in common. And each one of them have a different way of sort of presenting that, I think. Yeah, All of America. Thank you.
Hey,
did you know that Andre 3000 had a song called Hey Ya?
Yeah.
In 2003.
Yeah.
And then he did another album with Big Boi in 2006, which was a Outkast movie, a soundtrack to a movie called Idlewild.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then he didn't put out anything until 2023, which was that flute album.
Right.
That we referenced in this episode. Mm-hmm. And did you know that in a recent interview, he was asked if he would like to put out a solo MC rap record? And he said that I would love to.
Hmm.
And did you know that he was in the studio with Mike D of the Beastie Boys and a few other, like, I don't remember who else was there. So maybe we'll see Andre 3000 come back.
That'd be cool.
As a rapper again. What were your thoughts? Did you listen to that Andre 3000 album?
Yeah, it wasn't my jam.
Yeah, me neither. I appreciated what he was doing and where he was going with it. But same here. I wasn't really into it. It's kind of
I can like see why people would like it. Yeah. I don't know. But I would also say that probably literally no one who likes it is like into flute music. You know,
yeah, probably.
I think that you know, if it wasn't Andre 3000, no one would listen to it.
What if it was?
That's mean to say, but that's how I feel.
I think you might be right. I wonder what fans of like Lil Jon, what if Lil Jon did a flute record? Wonder if that would make any difference.
Yeah. I don't know. Probably. I'm not sure what it would sound like.
Wouldn't it be crazy if like most rappers just got sick and tired of the current state of hip hop and Andre 3000 started a trend of 40-year-old rappers making like woodwind and brass and whatever records.
Yeah, I'd be into that. You know, I don't even know any rappers, but I would listen to like just like French horn records by hip hop artists. I think like that'd be cool.
Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Like put out a French horn record.
Insane Brass Posse.
Insane Brass Posse. IBP.
Iowa Beef Processors Incorporated.
gross.
They have the IBP logo, the old IBP logo.
Oh, man. Insane Brass Posse.
Insane Brass Posse.
Ugh.
It'd be funny if, like, they're instead of painting their faces as clowns, they paint their faces like gold, like brass.
Or they could wear like pig noses.
IBP.
Yeah. So they're clowns, but they're also pigs.
Yeah.
Getting slaughtered to the sound of brass instruments. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I'd listen to that.
So we learned a lot about the 90s today. That's
holy smokes.
Yeah. I think we need to start that. That should be a thing that we should do for maybe one more episode, start teaching our listening audience about other decades.
Well, I would assume that everyone listening to this lived through the 90s.
Okay. Well, maybe.
Wouldn't you? Hey, reach out to us if you were not born in the 90s. I mean, not alive in the 90s. If you were born after the year 2000, then let us know.
Yeah, you can actually contact us through Instagram or Facebook or, you know, acceleratorthrust@gmail.com.
And yeah, or here's my phone number. Just kidding. You want my phone number? Just message us. I'll tell you. I don't care.
All right. Here's Eric's phone number. Next thing you know, it's like on the Instagram page.
Oh,
here's Eric's phone number if you want it.
No one would call, even still. Even scammers don't call me.
That'd be funny if like Pete, you start getting prank calls like, are you the host of that Accelerative Thrust podcast?
Yeah.
They're like, well, you better go catch your refrigerator. I think it's running away. And they hang up.
Well, you better let him out.
So you're like, what?
You know, I'd take it. Any interaction would be just fine with me. I think people listen to this show and feel like they're hanging out with us, you know, and we're really good friends and stuff, which might be true, but we don't receive any of that. And
no, we don't at all.
We're very lonely. Like, we're the only ones who talk to each other.
Yeah, we're the only ones that talk to each other. That's it.
That's it. Yeah. No one interacts.
You see what you guys are doing? What I think would be funny, though, is if somebody did call you with the refrigerator joke, and it'd be so funny if it was like, yeah, is this Eric from Accelerative Thrust? And we just got a word that your refrigerator might not be running. Might want to go check it. You go check it. You're like, it's running good. It's like, well, you better go catch it. And it'd be funny if you got like really angry. You're like, I'm going to find you and be, you know, start like talking like George Costanza from Seinfeld or something.
Yeah. I'd be like, never talk about my refrigerator again. That's when it gets serious for me. Talk about my wife, my family, me, my friends. I don't care. Leave my fridge out of it.
Leave my fridge out of it. Leave my fridge out of your fucking mouth.
Yeah. Okay. Oh my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap.
That's our new ending.
That's a wrap. I don't know. Y'all do whatever you want to do. I rap.
Oh, Christ. Okay. Let's go. Bye.
Bye.
Wake up, Tony.
Okay, campers, rise and shine, and don't forget your booties, because it's cold out there.
It's cold out there every day. What is this, Miami Beach?
Hardly. How's it going, boys? You're playing yesterday's tape.